The True Crime and Paranormal Podcast Festival is just around the corner. We'll be at the Denver Marriott Westminster July 12th through 14th, manning our booth, giving out stickers, selling merch, and facilitating a session on Sunday morning. There's still plenty of time to get tickets, and you can use our code RAIN15 to get 15% off your purchase. The True Crime Paranormal Podcast Festival is a great opportunity to connect with your favorite podcasts, those impacted by the cases we discuss, and other true crime fans and creators. We had a blast last year, and we cannot wait for this year. We think you will have a great time, too, so join us. You can get your tickets at truecrimepodcastfestival.com and remember to use the code RAIN15 at checkout for 15% off.
As I've gotten older, it's become more and more important to me that I support my immune system and digestion. I'm always looking for a supplement that's not only good for my body, but tastes good too. That's where Equilibria Daily Nutrigreens comes in. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. Daily Nutrigreens contain an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and vegetables. These greens are great because they're the quickest way to fill in your daily nutritional gaps, and it tastes good. Equilibria makes it easy to meet your nutritional goals. You can subscribe so you don't have to worry about running out, and you get 25% off each month. Head to myeq.com and use code RAIN for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutrigreens and much more. That's myeq.com and use code RAIN at checkout for 15% off site-wide today.
This is Murder in the Rain, where each week Emily Rowney, Alicia Holland, and Josh McCullough tell true crime stories of the Pacific Northwest. Murder in the Rain contains graphic content. Listener discretion is advised.
The word dynamite comes from the Greek word dynamis, meaning power. The average stick of dynamite is 1.25 inches in diameter and 8 inches in length, with each weighing up to 1/2 pound. Dynamite explodes in all directions, doing the most damage where it meets the strongest resistance. It has an explosion velocity between 10 and 20,000 feet per second. And this is a quote from the National Fire Protection Association. An explosion is a sudden, rapid release of energy that produces potentially damaging pressures. A deflagration is an explosion where the flame speed is lower than the speed of sound, which is approximately equal to 335 meters per second or 750 miles per hour. A detonation is an explosion where the flame speed is greater than the speed of sound. Detonations are louder and often more destructive than deflagrations.
That's very interesting. I didn't know
that. I didn't know it either. I learned so much about dynamite and explosives.
But he's on a list.
I'm
a professional.
I honestly could be. I did so much. I did a lot of research.
Subject matter expert
Well,
now.
Just looking at like what nitroglycerin is made of or dynamite is made of and the different mixes and figuring out what was used in this, I think I might be on a list. I downloaded a bunch of PDFs I have now about it. A high explosive is any chemical mixture that detonates with a reaction velocity of over 5,000 feet per second. Low explosives deflagrate rather than detonate. Their reaction velocities are 2,000 to less than 3,000 feet per second. Black powder dynamite is both efficient and hazardous. Though it has only 20 to 30% of the explosive power of full nitro dynamite, if that power is multiplied and applied to a human body, the effect is devastating. April 21, 1955, was the last day of Oliver Smith's life. 12 sticks of black powder explosive had been bound with black tape and mounted to the underside of the driver's seat in Smith's 1952 Buick sedan. He'd been driving around Portland for 2 days, unaware of death waiting beneath his seat cushion. Oliver Smith parked in the lot at the Columbia Country Club in Northeast Portland, founded in 1925 and now called the Columbia Edgewater. Smith was a prominent attorney who worked for the legal offices of Crum and Walker. At 24, he saw heavy combat during World War II, making his way through the Battle of the Bulge, earning a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star for valor. In 1950, he lost a bid for a state Senate seat, and he was known as one of the top amateur golfers in the state. He was married to 34-year-old Marjorie Jean Evans Smith. It was evening on April 21, 1955, when Smith arrived to the club, and about 11:25 p.m. when he called Marjorie at home to tell her he'd be there in a few minutes. They lived only 6 miles away in the Northeast Alameda District. Newspapers refer to the country club's event as a stag night, which conjures vintage images of cigar smoke and horny drunk men whooping at burlesque dancers or watching pornographic film strips, likely while eating steak. I think stag night in this instance meant men only at the Columbia that night. And Oliver Smith was there playing gin rummy with three other members. It seemed an otherwise prudish few hours, though maybe they used naughty playing cards like the ones I have linked in my sources. Smith got into his Buick at 11:30. He turned the key, tapped the starter switch, and died instantly in a blast which destroyed the vehicle and obliterated the 35-year-old attorney and new husband. The damage to Oliver Smith's body was so extreme, it took 2 hours to identify his remains. From ScienceDirect.com, a pressure wave travels through water faster and with greater intensity than through air. Another well-known difference between air and water is that air is compressible, whereas water is not. When blast wave impacts a human body, a small part of the wave is reflected, whereas the remainder travels through the body. As the wave travels through the mass of water-containing organs within the thoracic cavity, the chest, right? It also hits the delicate lung alveoli. When pressure builds up around the thin, soft walls of the alveoli, the gas inside gets compressed. This may cause the delicate alveoli walls to rupture, and internal bleeding may result. Excessive bleeding can seriously impede breathing and lead to death. Something else I didn't know about. Explosions.
But that would be more if you were at a distance? Or
correct.
Is that the slowed down version of what happened to him?
Yeah, he was only, he was less than a foot away from it. So okay. It was that it was on just, a massive scale. Yeah. The Eugene Guard newspaper said the car's roof was found 50 yards away and its windshield was found 150 yards from the explosion.
Dang.
From a United Press article, Smith was blown to bits. The blast demolished the car and blew Smith into the grill of another car about 20 feet away. The Oregonian described that Smith landed only 3 feet behind his vehicle. So reports vary, yeah. I guess.
Significantly.
Per usual.
There were no witnesses to the explosion, but Martin Stout, a bartender at the country club, heard it and, seeing the flaming wreckage, ran outside, emptying fire extinguishers onto the blaze. It was later found that the week before the car bombing, Oliver Smith had applied for a permit to carry a concealed firearm. The now widow of Oliver Smith, Marjorie Jean Evans, was born in Portland, Oregon on February 20th, 1921. Her father died when she was only 5, her mother when she was 13. Her first marriage was to Merrick Hersey in South Carolina in 1941. The couple had a son together, Gregory, and they divorced in 1946. The cause for the divorce, submitted by Marjorie, was cruelty. In 1955, Merrick Hersey was remarried and lived in Sacramento, working as a lab technician. Gregory lived with the Smiths. Marjorie Evans was a student at Multnomah College for 2.5 years and attended Annie Wright Seminary in Tacoma, Washington. She lived in Los Angeles, New Orleans, and San Francisco. At work, she wore many hats. Marjorie was a swimming teacher, an airline employee, a dental technician, a shipyard worker, a cruise ship stewardess, and an actor in religious films.
Sounds wow. Like a board game.
She dreamed of moving to Hollywood to be a star and had nearly completed writing a book on gems.
That is a very eclectic background. Yeah.
It was revealed later that she was also planning a trip to Africa to find gems and learn about gems.
Wow.
So that was like
a whole
her
expedition.
Passion.
Yeah, she wanted to get a group of people together to help pay for the trip, and then she would be the guide on the trip. But it fell apart.
She sounds fun.
She gets married again in 1952, and that's when all those sorts of things stopped.
Yeah, they usually do. Mm-hmm. The fun stops.
Okay, you got kids, you got my lower back hurts.
You got to get dinner on the table.
the impression I got of Marjorie Smith was that she was very likable and charismatic and kind of outgoing.
I mean, how could you not want to hang out with someone who can do all that fun stuff?
Yeah, for real.
Her second marriage to Michael Brandt in July 1949 ended in divorce in May 1951. She married Oliver Kermit Smith on August 22, 1952, and they'd divorced near to their second anniversary, which was August 6, 1954. The cause, as with Marjorie's first marriage, was listed as cruel and unusual treatment, meaning verbal and physical abuse. She and Oliver Smith had two children together. At the crime scene, Virgil A. Crum, Oliver Smith's law partner and a member of the Columbia Country Club, told detectives about Oliver being beaten the month before the murder. On the evening of March 10th, as Smith pulled into his garage and got out of his Buick, he was struck in the head several times with a heavy object, but was able to, quote, beat off his assailant.
Is that why he wanted the conceal and carry?
That's correct.
He wasn't, like, in with loan sharks or anything, was
he? It didn't appear so. I believe the law office that he worked for was really prominent, known, well-known, and he was known.
Retaliation or something.
Do you know what kind of law it was? Was he a defense lawyer?
I wish I had.
Accountant?
I couldn't find it.
He was too fixated on dynamite to research.
No,
that.
I promise. I looked and it just said attorney. Didn't say any kind. Yeah. This was at the house he and Marjorie and the kids shared on Northeast Alameda Street. Reported to be a bottle in a cloth sack, the actual weapon used to club Oliver Smith was found in some shrubs near the Smith home by two neighborhood boys. It was a 3-pound metal bar wrapped in friction tape. In hospital after the beating, Oliver Smith was asked if he knew who'd attacked him, and he whispered, "Wolf." Though he declined to press charges because of the complications between he and Mr. Wolf and Marjorie Smith.
Uh-oh. We'll need to hear about that now.
This is why Oliver Smith applied for a concealed firearm permit, and this is how 45-year-old Victor L. Wolf became the focus of the investigation. He was an electrician who did handyman work for the Smiths, and he was a lodger in a house Marjorie had on Tillamook Street.
Handyman and lodger?
We know how that's going to end.
This is a quote from the Oregonian. Police arrested a suspect, husky, graying Victor Lawrence Wolf, who was yanked out of bed and arrested 2 hours after Oliver Smith was killed. Reporter George Spagna of the Oregonian reported that the man didn't seem surprised that police had come to his small apartment in the middle of the night. He didn't ask the questions why, where, or how. Interviewed by police and an eventual witness at trial, Mrs. Ruth Moskrip, a friend of Marjorie since early 1953, said she came to Portland for Mrs. Smith's remarriage to Oliver Kermit Smith on February 4th, 1955. So Marjorie and Oliver were remarried about 2 months before the car bomb.
What husband had he been?
The latest one.
Okay. So he was number three. They split. They got back together.
Yep.
Okay.
Ruth said, "At the wedding reception, I thought Wolf was rather surly and sulky. I think he was sweet on Marjorie." So the boarder, Victor Wolf, watched Oliver and Marjorie get married. Victor Lawrence Wolf was a World War II veteran born in 1909. He'd been married twice and was secondly divorced. And after his arrest, he had no problem confessing his role in the bombing in rich detail.
Oh, he just straight up confessed?
Immediately. The moment they had him in cuffs, he was happy to.
Wow.
He's like, well, I did it.
According to his confession, he and Marjorie were lovers and planned to start a new life in Alaska with the money from the killing of Oliver Smith.
Oh.
He said that Marjorie Smith remarried Oliver Smith in February solely to become the beneficiary of his estate. Victor Wolf said further, Mrs. Smith bought him a revolver to shoot her husband, but his nerve failed. And the truth of the .38 revolver is that it once belonged to Oliver Smith's father, and Oliver Smith received it. He was bequeathed it after his father died. And that was a gun that Victor Wolf said Marjorie provided him. But he chickened out on the assassination that was going to happen with the gun because he didn't want anyone to hear it, I guess. After he was going to kill him with the gun and he failed at that, he was going to beat him to death with that metal bar.
Oh,
and he failed at that.
Okay.
And then...
So he's not the best hitman in the world.
No, but he keeps trying.
That's all that counts.
You got to get back up on that horse. Victor Wolf was so thorough in his confession that he led police to a fuse box in his room where they found the pistol and a set of Oliver Smith's car keys. Wires and tape found hidden in a vent in Wolf's car and room matched collected items from the crime scene.
After watching Jagged Edge yesterday, I'm on edge to know whether or not he was just jealous and watching from afar and wanted to take him out, or if she actually
was involved,
wanted him to do it.
We'll see. Or will we? Wolf's version of events went like this. Marjorie had him over to the Smith home on April 20th to assemble a swing and playground in the backyard for Susan's third birthday, which was that day. He brought 12 sticks of dynamite with him, stowed them under the driver's seat in Oliver Smith's Buick, and ran wires under the floor mat to the ignition, but left them disconnected. On April 21st, Wolf drove to the club after Smith and finished wiring the device to the car's starter.
Whoa, bold.
From Offbeat, Oregon, he'd bought the dynamite in two different stores near Malala, and he and Marjorie had traveled to Ridgefield, Washington to buy the detonators, he said. And when he guided detectives to the spot where the picnic happened on the way back from Ridgefield, detectives found cut-off pussy willows that ended up matching ones in a vase in the Smith home basement. On this trip to get dynamite and detonator caps that they went on, they had to go to Malala, and then they had to go up to Ridgefield, I think, to get the caps. And on the way back from getting these detonator caps, Victor Wolf and Marjorie Smith stopped on the side of the road, had a picnic, and were testing the detonator caps to see if they would go off.
How romantic.
And when this was happening, or before, maybe before, right when they were going to leave, a school bus driver drove by and saw them.
Oh.
Could identify them. He's like, oh yeah, that guy had a brown Mercury sedan and he looked like this. Victor Wolf is pretty striking and tall. Kind of looks like David Byrne from Talking Heads, with a gray crew cut.
Okay. So he admitted, we stopped here, had this picnic, played with the detonators, which was confirmed not only by the bus driver who saw them, but that they had exact plants in their own in her house.
Yeah, a vase of pussy willows. And then the detectives went back to that spot and actually cut down the limbs of the pussy willows and took them to, I think, the U of O or something to have them tested.
Oh, wow.
And they matched perfectly.
Wow.
So it was clear that they, that at the very least,
had been
Victor
there.
Wolf had been there at least. Yeah.
Ooh, if she's involved, that's yucky.
Stopping to
have a little romantic play date with your boyfriend that's going to kill your husband, and then you take the plants, the flowers, into your house. Ew.
Wolf told Deputy Walter Graven and Detective Norman Lighthizer he bought 36 sticks of dynamite and detonating caps. He said he threw away what he didn't use, that he flushed the rest of the explosive down the toilet after breaking up the sticks. That seems irresponsible.
Mm-hmm. It really does.
Especially back then, we didn't have the water cleaning power of today.
Marjorie was questioned by police and utterly denied any connection to the bombing plot. Before talking to detectives at the Multnomah County Courthouse the day after the murder, she agreed to pose for news photographers. The young widow did not smile as the flashbulbs popped. A detective, Jack Wills, said during her interview, "Well, if you're so innocent, let's roll the lie detector on in here and see if we can prove it." And Marjorie protested so loudly that Wolf was in a nearby room. He heard her and he said, quote, "She told me she knew how to beat a lie detector." And this is a quote from the Oregonian. Pretty Marjorie Smith denied the story, called Wolf a repulsive old man, and sobbed, "I've never heard such twisted, terrible things in all my life." But Victor Wolf stuck to his story. When Marjorie was fingerprinted and had her mugshot taken, it was reported that she sobbed throughout, but no tears ran from her eyes.
Marjorie.
Girl, work on your acting skills.
The Oregonian described that Marjorie had a shapely figure and did not appear overweight.
Important details.
Gets a bad reporting bell.
Yeah.
I mean, the people need to know.
Yes, it's very pertinent to the trial and her husband's exploding murder.
Marjorie told detectives she and Smith's marriage was peaceful now, even though he had been abusive in the past. Quote, "Everything was working out fine. Oh, we still had fights once in a while, but who doesn't? I get over my meds easy, but his would drag on. All I had to do, though, was bake an apple pie, and everything would be all right again."
That works on me, too.
Marjorie's 83-year-old grandmother, Anna Nana Witterin,
no,
was interviewed 8 days after the car bombing. Yeah.
That's really her name.
Her name was Anna Witterin. I put the Nana in the middle. Nana in the middle, my favorite sitcom. But she was called Nana. She was Marjorie Smith's Nana.
Anna.
I just put it together. Her Nana, Anna. About the Smiths' marriage, Nana said, she loved Kerm. That's Kermit. That's Oliver. She loved Kerm, but they didn't get along very well. He was too bossy with her. I told her the first year is always hard. You have to look up to him. He's a lawyer, a big man.
Oof. Thanks, Anna Nana.
The old days.
Toxic advice from older generations.
Still going strong today.
Just wake him an apple pie.
Marjorie went on to reveal that she had dated Victor Wolfe several times while divorced from Oliver Smith, explaining that she felt sorry for Wolfe because his wife had run away with another man. After 10 hours of questioning, police charged Wolfe and Mrs. Smith with plotting her husband's murder for the sake of his $21,000 life insurance policy and an estate valued at $30,000 to $40,000. Today, the value of that insurance policy and estate would be close to $700,000. The day after his arrest, Wolfe told a reporter, I wish I had never met her, but I still love her. All the time, I knew it would never work out, but for some reason, I did it. The funeral service for Oliver Smith took place on April 25th at the Rose City Presbyterian Church. Only six of Smith's relatives attended. Aww. One of those was Marjorie Smith, who collapsed as the pastor went through the routine and was returned to Rocky Butte Jail immediately after the service.
This bitch. They let her go? That's crazy.
Yeah. She did not attend the burial. It was reported that Marjorie sobbed as she entered the chapel, but again, no tears fell from her eyes. That same evening, April 25th, county officials arranged for Merrick Hersey, Marjorie's first ex-husband, to meet with her at the Rocky Butte Jail to discuss matters with their son Gregory, who was 12. Merrick Hersey is someone that Marjorie alleged abuse against.
Mm-hmm.
And went, for a time, she was living in Placerville, California. And it was there was a record of her going to the police to ask for protection against him in case he showed up.
They were dating?
They had a kid together.
Yeah, they had a kid. That was her first husband.
Oh, the first husband. Yeah,
they
yeah,
were divorced.
Okay.
And yeah. As Hersey entered the room, Marjorie covered her head with her blanket and moaned, no, no, no. She was eventually able to speak to him, but would not look directly at him. When Merrick Hersey first met with law enforcement officers in Portland, he told them within the last 18 months, Marjorie had asked him about a lethal, untraceable poison. He was a lab technician for a chemical company. A few days after the murder, a friend of Marjorie's named Violet Renshaw gave an interview to The Oregonian and described in a brutally honest fashion that she, quote, was a friend of Marjorie Smith during at least one low point of her varied career. At the time, I felt there was something wrong. She acted more as if Oliver were a meal ticket than a man she loved and was going to marry. She helped the young brunette financially and otherwise. She believed Marjorie was both a liar and a dreamer. Marjorie represented herself as being destitute when she came to Placerville early in 1952. She was pregnant at the time with now 3-year-old Susan Smith and receiving money from Oliver Smith the entire time. Violet Renshaw continued to spill the tea. She said Marjorie hadn't displayed any love for Oliver Smith during two visits he'd made to Placerville shortly after Susan's birth. She claimed Marjorie was, quote, consorting at the time with a woods worker, a pole peeler, despite the fact that Oliver Smith was helping to support her. Eventually, this man just, quote, faded out of the picture. Regarding a dozen letters Marjorie Smith had sent Mrs. Renshaw after moving to Portland with Oliver Smith, I answered two of them, then stopped writing. All she had to say was about the fine china and silver and other things she had gotten in the marriage to Oliver. She wrote in great detail, and it disgusted me a little. Marjorie's trial was set to begin in Portland, but was moved 50 miles southwest to McMinnville. Circuit Judge James Bain reasoned that the unrelenting media scrutiny toward the case provided an undercurrent of feeling that the defendant is guilty, if only the state can prove it. The jurors were housed in a sectioned-off wing at the Hotel Oregon, and there's a photo of the jury pre-trial in the jury box in court printed on the front page of the newspaper.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't know they did that, and I can't understand why.
What a wild time.
12 people, their faces and their names.
It's like the original reality TV. Like,
yeah.
Here are the, you know, they're like a B-list celebrity mm-hmm. at that point.
If you'd like to take your displeasure out on them later,
yeah.
you
oh
can find
if they've
them.
They've sent your loved one to prison.
God.
Oh my goodness.
The original doxing.
During the trial, Marjorie was housed in a cell at the rear of the courthouse. The trial began on October 25th. The prosecution alleged Marjorie and Victor Wolf plotted Oliver Smith's murder over a game of Scrabble. The jury was also told of an attempt to blow up Smith in his car on March 31st, but the device failed. Prosecutors followed Wolf's lead that he was Marjorie's sex slave, who set up the bombing after she refused to continue having sex with him. Bruce Spaulding, Marjorie's defense attorney, insisted there was no affair, that she and Victor Wolf's relationship was businesslike and most honorable. Bruce Spaulding wrote in a memoir and retrospective that, quote, "All during the trial, I could feel a vibration from Marjorie sitting behind me, shaking with fear, which makes sense as her punishment could have been a gas chamber death sentence." Also in this unpublished memoir of Spaulding's, he described that while Marjorie Evans was dating Kermit Smith in Portland, that's Oliver Smith, she was also still seeing her former husband, Merrick Hersey, a lab technician who lived in Sacramento with his second wife.
The one that she claimed abused her.
Yes. Marjorie and Hersey flew to Miami for an illicit weekend together in 1951. This is before she met Oliver Smith. They talked about abandoning their lives and starting anew in Florida. They soon came to their senses and returned to their respective homes, but their longing lingered. Months later, Marjorie gave birth to a daughter and married Kermit Smith. There was a strong suspicion that Hersey was the father of the child, Spaulding recalled in the memoir, but Marjorie never did admit that. A prosecution witness, Thomas A. Marlin, 37, a butcher, knew Marjorie for 12 years. 2 weeks before Smith's death, she met with him. Quote, "She asked my aid in getting rid of Smith. I turned her down." After his testimony, Bruce Spaulding noted that Marlin had spent 3 years in prison for robbery, and therefore his testimony was unreliable. Marjorie cried throughout her testimony. She detailed the night of the murder, telling the court that Oliver had called there just before the explosion, and that she learned of his death when a reporter called the house at midnight. She recalled calling the reporter back to ask if it was a joke, and then waking up on the floor after passing out. She denied any involvement in the murder. Victor Wolf's testimony was a repeat of his lengthy initial confession, with the attack in the garage, multiple failed attempts to kill Smith, and a statement that made Marjorie go rigid in the courtroom. Wolf said after the first car bomb failed to go off, Marjorie suggested they use 12 dynamite sticks, up from 10. He said Marjorie was afraid 10 might not be enough, and she didn't want a cripple on her hands the rest of her life.
Oh, boy.
That's all alleged by the person who actually did the bombing. So, but pretty spicy.
Yeah.
In closing, the prosecution statement was basically, if the pussy willow limbs fit, you cannot acquit.
Did you just make that up?
I wrote it days ago. It was a 13-day trial, and the jury deliberated more than 15 hours before acquitting Marjorie Smith of murder.
No!
Yes. Screams echoed throughout the courtroom when the court clerk read the verdict.
No way! I did not see that coming.
I know. After the verdict was read, Marjorie went to each juror and thanked them. She was weeping, as was Bruce Spaulding.
Now, do you know the vote? Did they release?
I didn't. I don't know if it had to be unanimous. I don't know. I wish. I don't
Wait,
know if I saw that anywhere.
But that's just her.
Yes.
Okay.
Victor Wolf has not been on trial yet.
Okay.
Spaulding wrote that he was told the day the verdict was announced, Portland newspapers sold more copies than any day in history.
Of course they did. She must have been good looking, huh?
She was, you know, pretty and
for the
kind
time.
Of plain. Yeah. I mean, she was.
But also a bit of a fringe lifestyle. All those jobs, all those husbands, kids from different spouses, you know, for back then.
It's like we're talking about watching Below Deck or something.
Yeah,
well,
it's
entertaining. It's a real drama.
Oh, it's been all the relationships.
But yeah, especially for the time where you're supposed to be prim and proper and we don't talk about divorce and we don't talk about cheating and we don't do those things, supposedly. She was a real outlier in that way. So it would be juicy.
Quite juicy. Yeah, it was a total media circus. And it was weird. The newspapers started just referring to her by her first name, which I thought was kind of weirdly personal.
That, it was that popular that
her name
alone,
her first name was known. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
In January 1957, Marjorie Smith regained custody of her daughter, Susan, but then lost it to Oliver Smith's sister, Ellen Hightower, who lived in California.
Good.
This was after a family court hearing where Marjorie insisted she was a good mother, but she had trouble responding to various disquieting facts about her history. And this is all a quote from the Oregonian. She said that when her first husband went overseas during World War II, she was raped and had a baby, which she put up for adoption. Marjorie said she told her husband about these terrible events when he returned, but he divorced her anyway, claiming she had committed adultery. Pointing out that Marjorie Smith and Victor Wolfe had had some sort of relationship, the case's appellate judge concluded that when Susan Smith got older, she would inevitably ponder the most unpleasant possibilities about her mother. And so it was best for the girl to have nothing to do with her.
Ouch.
Listening to the judge, Marjorie burst into tears. Whether innocent or guilty, moral or immoral, Marjorie Smith has been through 8 months of hell, the Oregon Journal wrote, referring to the murder trial followed by the custody battle. The newspaper added, "The widow is a woman alone. Old friends cut her in the street."
I mean, maybe don't kill your husband.
Yeah.
Allegedly. I mean, she was proven not guilty in a court of law.
Innocent until proven innocent, so.
Marjorie soon moved out of Oregon. Virgil Crum, Oliver Smith's fellow attorney and co-worker slash boss, died in 1958. On a slow news day in July, the Oregonian reported Crum had been feeding a waddle of ducks that were hanging out on his property. And in August, they reported that he'd had a heart attack at the Columbia Country Club and died nearly 3 weeks later. I think he was playing golf. Victor Wolfe was tried, convicted of murder, and received a life sentence.
Surprising he was even tried, since he was confessing left and right. Maybe he wanted to go to trial to say that he was pressured by her. This is not based on anything, just a total guess. But he maybe thought, I won't get the chair if I go in and say I was lured by this woman, or she threatened me or pressured me.
That's a pretty good bet.
Whatever.
Then and now, to say something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I don't know.
So he received that life sentence, but he was paroled in 1962. So it was only 6 or 7 years that he was actually in prison for blowing up Oliver Smith.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, maybe they realized she probably had.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that. Yeah, yeah.
That was maybe part of the deal would be life with the possibility of parole after a couple years. And they're like, well, the actual mad person behind this is walking free. So might as well let the guy blowing people up go.
He moved to Florida and was married on June 26, 1965, to Leola T. Sweat, a well-to-do widow.
Mm.
She was born in 1897 and died in 1997.
Wow.
And Victor Wolfe died in Castleberry, Florida in March 2000. And he had worked as an electrical contractor, I think, in his last years.
Wow.
Quote, Marjorie, for her part, worked hard to keep a low profile. She didn't collect the life insurance for Oliver's death, so she took a job running the gift shop of the 33,000-ton luxury liner SS America that operated between New York and Europe. Bruce Spaulding, however, knew where she was. She was living in Texas, apparently happily married. He wrote that in a memoir that sat in a cardboard box for years before his own granddaughter found it.
So after she did the boat, she moved to Texas?
Yeah, moved to Texas.
Oh, okay.
Why do you think they didn't publish? Was there any info on that?
His memoir?
Yeah.
I think he wrote it and put it in a box and just didn't do
just
it.
For him,
he did it for him, I believe. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Marjorie Smith also ended up living in Florida during her final years. She died in Palm Beach in 2001.
Amazing how everyone seems to get lured to Florida.
Well, when you're old and cold.
And running from your history. You go to Florida.
They'll accept you.
The Museum of Bad Judgment is a series of paintings based on an unpublished memoir by Bruce Spaulding, who was the Polk County District Attorney and later a private practice attorney in Salem and Portland in the middle of the last century. His memoir is called Some Interesting Criminal Cases I Have Tried and covers several murder cases that took place between 1943 and 1965.
What a catchy title.
Yeah.
Spaulding's granddaughter, the Tacoma artist Julia W. White, discovered his memoir more than a decade after Spaulding died in 1990 at 84. It inspired her to create a series of paintings that make up the exhibit, The Museum of Bad Judgment, on display in Salem. The artwork representing the Smith case isn't showy. White didn't recreate Oliver Smith's vicious car bomb murder, or the shock that swept through the courtroom months later when the verdict in his wife's trial was read. White said she's interested in the smaller parts of the stories, before the turning points. That's what I think about when I think about the horrible things that happen in people's lives. What led to that?
Jeez, I can't believe she was acquitted.
Yeah, at first I was thinking, Emily, it actually reminded me of your two cases ago, Mother's Love. Mm. How, you know, at first you hear she's in abusive relationship after abusive relationship. This guy crossed the line and she wanted out. You can't be mad because she's a victim of this guy. And then you hear
that she has a record.
Has a record. She keeps going back to that. Not that abuse victims don't, but she keeps starting relationships and they, no one,
yeah.
You're not hearing anywhere the abuse that was taking place.
It makes you wonder if any of that was true.
And I do feel like, and again, this is just a speculation based off of what you've told me off a piece of paper, Josh, but I feel like I'm sure everyone has, but I've definitely known a couple of these people that have the 40, you know, the jack of all trades, the master of none, and 45,000 jobs slash hobbies slash
constantly moving,
constantly going, and you're just not quite sure what the deal is.
Big plans, yeah, that fizzle,
yeah, totally. And relationship to relationship. Mm-hmm. So, picturing her as that kind of person, and if she had, she obviously had some sort of charm. Yeah, it's shocking. She was found not guilty.
You know, the photos where she's upset or crying, you can't really tell, but in pictures where she's smiling, she does beam. Mm. I'm not doing what they're doing and saying she was so beautiful, right. But you can see it.
Yeah.
When I know people like that, where they may not be like the most attractive person in the room, but when it's something about their like cadence and yeah. their smile, and then they really do light up the room.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's really surprising. And not that that guy should have had less time. But
Victor Wolf?
Yeah.
Maybe they considered it sort of a black eye for them to still have him.
Yeah.
We don't know his exact charge.
I think it was first degree.
Was it
really?
Yeah,
I can check.
But it also could have been for having explosives or... Because in a way, you could see if an alluring person is promising you money, hey, I'm going to get all this money afterwards. We can be together. I'll give you half.
I think he was just mesmerized by his love for her and then realized, oh, wow, how did she... Because
wow.
he regretted it later, right? He said that.
Oh, big time. Yeah. That he still loved her, but he regretted having done it. And he didn't know why he did it.
And the fact that he couldn't do it those other times because it was too intimate. You know, I couldn't shoot him. That's too intimate. I couldn't beat him
but
to death. That's too intimate.
It was like hands off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, again, that's where I kind of think of the, I don't want to be, I'm not this cold, horrible monster that's, oh yeah, let me do it. Let me do it. It's a transactional thing, not a desire of his.
I feel like we've seen a lot of cases, though, where a first-time offender doesn't get very many years
yeah.
in jail. They're let out early because of overcrowding or
right.
good behavior or what have you. It's not shocking.
And I didn't see that Victor Wolf had any sort of record previously. I saw one tiny jail stint for speeding. That was it.
That's insane.
So,
jail for speeding?
Yeah, yikes. Glad they don't do that anymore.
Yeah, you'd be put away.
Or maybe like, I think maybe like, hey, you got to, you know, that was reckless or whatever. You got to
right.
come down here and give us $50 or whatever yeah. the hell they did. Also, I didn't say earlier, did I say that it was connected to the, not connected to, but it was in the same time as the Meyer and Frank bombing that I talked about?
Well, I recognize Spalding.
Yeah, I think he was a part of that. Mm-hmm. And it was 6 days before. The Meyer and Frank bombing happened 6 days before this bombing.
So it was just bombs left and right.
Can
yeah.
you imagine that? We're just home watching the news. A bomb went off at a huge department store and a man was murdered when his car blew up. And then this bomb happened over here. That would
Dynamite
be crazy feeling.
At the same time, too, in Portland
Dynamite
and Vancouver.
Dynamite was Ozempic of its time.
So hot right now. At the time as well, where all these bombings were happening, there were also tons of hoax calls made to schools and businesses. And they were like, you know, fake extortion calls, but it was happening everywhere. Schools were being evacuated.
That's
and all this
chaotic.
Crap.
I feel like that happens after these big events.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
Yeah.
It's general commercial. I love That's
that great. You're doing a Dynamite.
Fuck
Yay.
Yeah.
Wet Dynamite.
Wet Dynamite.
Wet Dynamite. You sound good. It does feel like you're pushing, though.
I was going to say you're projecting.
You're projecting, but it feels
good,
like you're...
But I don't know if you can make
gotcha.
It.
Maybe, like, relax your throat yep. for a little bit. Let me put this in real quick.
I was so calm. I sounded sleepy. How was that?
That was great.
Great. You're
Perfect.
A real pro at
sticks. 4 inches. 4 lines into this thing.
4 inches.
4 inches into this thing.
Hey, that's what she said.
And that's all there is. There's nothing left but balls, baby.
Fuck.
I can try to snuff those in. Ha 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 ha! and explode.
Okay, Kermit.
Oh.
I heard Pee-wee.
Wow. Double Kermit.
What?
You'll see.
Oh.
Ooh, would it feel good to poop a boba ball?
A bigger one. Maybe not that small. Mm-hmm.
I think it would.
I think it would, too. Satisfying.
Gmail us if you think it would feel good to poop a booba ball. I mean, a boba, to poop a booba ball. To poop a booba ball. I didn't know I could spell the word Marjorie wrong so many times. Kids shared on Northeast. Did that sound good?
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Next.
Wires and tape found hidden in a...
That works on me, too.
Those back in the good old days.
Bring you a McDonald's apple pie and a warm washcloth.
Before and after.
Dream of a candy.
Oh, yeah, I got you two. It's two for two.
Yeah.
You get one now and one later. You're going to be hungry. I should say maybe, yeah, Marjorie's 83-year-old
banana
grandmother, Nana, Anna Nana Wintered.
Jesus Christ.
All right. I've had it with myself. Oh.
That pussy.
Mouth queef.
Wet dynamite?
Wet dynamite.
I thought of that when you were talking about flushing it down the pot.
Oh my God.
There's
was
a new
wet t-shirt dynamite.
Idea.
Holy shit. Yeah,
I didn't want to interrupt you though.
Just say drop. It says dropping bombs and it's putting dynamite in the toilet.
Murder in the Rain is a Cascade Media production, written, hosted, and edited by Josh McCullough, Emily Rowney, and Alicia Holland. Feel free to email us at murderintherain@gmail.com or through our website, murderintherain.com. For as little as a dollar a month, you can subscribe on Patreon to get exclusive access to ad-free and older episodes. For only $5, you can access Patreon-exclusive episodes and content. For more of us, be sure to follow on all the socials, listen to Josh and Alicia on their other show, Always Be My Sisters, and follow Emily on TikTok at @M_murderintherain.
And suck my balls.